The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
Back here for another episode of the Midwest Swing Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network, which you can find on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I'm your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon _ Warren. And I'm joined by Tom Schreier at T Schreier 3. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It was a fun game, at least for a couple innings.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, any hangover from the wild card game from last night, both literal or figurative, as far as hangovers are considered?
Oh, right, yeah. No, I wasn't power drinking through it or anything like that.
I suppose some people might have been with the amount of self-loathing that some of the fans have, and that has continued as an outpouring, which we might expect with how Twins fans and Minnesota fans in general externalize whatever you want to call it, whether it's inadequacies, whether it's their insecurities. It's rarely pretty, and it's been pretty obvious online today or even during the game last night. I tell you what, though, I almost called you Mike. I tell you what, Tom, I'm pretty charged up about what I'm seeing online as far as not only responses to my tweets, but as far as what people have to say. So today we'll have a little post-mortem podcast and see if we can hash out some of the things that we're seeing online and things that we observed during the game. If you want to see my rapid reaction, go to zonecoverage.com under the key tab, keyword, or actually the tab, Twins.
Yep.
And I guess my key takeaway was that you can lose a game in the first inning. I don't think you can win a game in the first inning.
That was my thought literally as Rosario hit that home run.
Yeah. But here was my take, and I don't know that a lot of people saw it this way. Joe Girardi did exactly what he had to do in the first inning. If the shoe was on the other foot, Paul Molitor can't go get Ervin Santana, I don't think. Now, if it's a target field, it's different.
Maybe.
But here's the deal. The shoe kind of was on the other foot. I mean, I don't know how many outs there were when Santana gave up the bomb. And it, even the game is 3-3 different than 3-0. Excuse me, but here's the deal. The bullpen that Girardi has allowed him to make that move, whereas Molitor's bullpen at his disposal would not have allowed that.
Yeah.
Santana, 34 years old. Severino, 23 years old. You're going to manage those guys differently. Severino throwing 190-some innings for the first time in his career. Santana, over 200 innings. I bet he's done that 10 times or 8 times or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think Girardi went and basically cemented the fact that he is a terrific manager, or at least in that moment. And again, good managers can be bailed out by good teams. Is it a bad decision if the bullpen blows up? I don't know. But what I'm seeing is, with the benefit of hindsight, I think it's easy to give credit to Girardi for what he did.
Let me backtrack.
Sure,
One pace.
I'm good
here
at that, so I can backtrack.
I just, because this crossed my mind while you were saying this. It is understandable that people are upset about this kind of getting over the hump with the Yankees. It also doesn't help that ESPN literally ran a graphic, because I stayed up a little bit that night for other reasons, actually outside of the game, and just had ESPN running in the background. Mm-hmm. They go to that Van Pelt show after that.
Yeah.
And they literally ran that graphic. And it, of course, this is the property they had. They want to emphasize, like, if anyone tune in late for the game or whatever, what happened in it. But they ran that graphic over and over. I think it's 13 straight playoff losses for the Twins.
And they'll be record, tied with the Red Sox.
And that have, I mean, there's something like 2-13 against the Yankees or something. And
it, Nine straight losses to the Yankees in the postseason.
Yeah. And so here's the, here's a couple thoughts that went through my head while watching the game. I watched part of it with my parents at dinner. And it was hilarious telling my dad, who was facing the other way, away from the TV, like, Dozier just hit a home run. Wait. Rosario just hit a home run. And he's like, what? Like, what is going on? He's a casual Twins fan.
Right.
He's like, what is going on here? And then we, I turned on the radio, went home, and watched the rest of it at home, as I told you off the air, while emailing Mike Gelfand, and we'll get into that.
Oh, man.
but in that moment, I said, they kind of hit him in the face right away. That Brian Dozier, the guy who said, we're going to make the playoffs this year, who was upset that they sold at the deadline, and that has become the voice of the Twins, right? For a, which is crazy, an eighth rounder, right? Who, like, we all know his story at this point. He did what a leader is supposed to do. He goes, I'm going for it right away.
And they punched the Yankees in the mouth.
And it's a, and it's a cool moment because he's a guy that went from, changed his number from 20 to 2 because he grew up loving Derek Jeter, right? And Rosario is just kind of a kind of guy, I don't think this stuff bothers him too
much.
Goes out and plays.
Yep.
I said, man, this is a long time to hold this lead. The way I saw it, and I was going to write this, but I don't know if it comes across while I'm writing, but there's a common trope. This is going to get nerdy. You got to, you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready.
There's a common trope, especially in very long video games, that they throw the final boss at you right away. And they say, this is what you have to get to. And you have to grind all these hours to get good enough to beat it. And I feel like that's the Yankees. Like, they will always be there. There is no guarantee that the Twins will just because they got in now. You can see kind of the progress where maybe they go from 85 to 88, 90 wins. That they go from wild card team at home to maybe taking over the AL Central while fending off eventually. I think the Chicago team is probably going to put it together. We know about all their prospects and all that. But you see that natural progression, but there's no guarantee that will happen. Where you know the Yankees will be there. Gary Sanchez, Judge, the bullpen they have. And I know just reading the reaction today that Irvin got slammed, right?
Yep.
The columnist threw the red meat to the rabid fans.
Well.
And, you know, I saw a lot of different reactions of how they have to add pitching, which I think is correct. I will say this. The game went kind of how I thought it would. I didn't see it being this high scoring, but I knew that that 3-0 lead probably wouldn't sustain throughout the whole thing. And it's not shocking Santana gave up home runs. It shouldn't be shocking that they got to Severino right away. We saw in that clone game it kind of got lost, but they hit him well.
Yep.
And I think it came down to a righty-heavy bullpen that's very talented for the Yankees, and could the lefties or guys who hit righties well in the Twins lineup capitalize on this? That was the only X factor to me. And once that didn't happen, I was like, yeah, I'm not surprised with this result. It's a 90-win team, 85-win team. It's in Yankee Stadium. And the Twins weren't supposed to be there this year.
Right. And I guess the theory that, or the take that's been coming out today that I'm least enthused about is, why didn't Byron Buxton bunt in the first inning? Runners on second and third, one out. No, like, literally, I've been waging war on Twitter all day.
Okay.
And it's like, seriously? They're like, well, what about a squeeze play? I'm like, you've already scored three runs. A squeeze is basically you determining that that fourth run is so pivotal that you're willing to risk giving up an out or a base runner for that. Because here's the deal. If the squeeze is perfectly executed, you might get Buxton on first base. You might have runners in the corners, which is fine. Like, but the risk doesn't outweigh the reward. With two on in scoring position, you don't have the luxury of knowing how the rest of the game will go. So I feel like, here's the deal. The people are dealing in hindsight. They're thinking, oh, it would have been nice to get another run there. Maybe two. Yeah, but if you're dealing in hindsight, how do you not also think they lost by four runs? Those one or two runs didn't make any difference in the long run.
Yeah.
If you're going to deal in hindsight, in that moment, you want to continue punching the Yankees in the mouth. I don't care that Chad Green came in and Severino got taken out. The idea that Chad Green, this insurmountable force to be reckoned with, should be squeezed or bunted against.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me, because here's the deal. Severino is awesome, and the Twins jumped him. You keep playing your offensive game until someone stops you. You do not start the process of stopping yourself because the Yankees are too good to give them that.
Yeah, I agree.
You cannot bunt. You cannot bunt there. And the people are like, well, what about bunting for a hit? The infield was in. The infield is that you need the element of surprise to bunt for a hit.
Yeah.
The infield is in. You can't squeeze because a right-handed pitcher sees that play in front of them. He's pitching out of the stretch. You have first base open. In the worst case, if Green sees it and doesn't have time to pitch out, he hits Buxton intentionally. Again, that's not a bad thing, but it takes the squeeze out of play. Like, and then somebody was like, well, you might make them nervous because they're reeling. Byron Buxton, with 700 career play, whatever he has, bunting to Todd Frazier, who has been in the big leagues for like 12 years or whatever it is.
Yeah.
People are like, make him make the throw. These guys are big leagues because they make those throws. The percentages of fielding plays that these guys make, even the bad fielders, are 95, 96%. Because errors happen doesn't make your gamble a good one. And so I'm beside myself about the idea that the Twins should have bunted there. Because how much of an uproar is there? Why the hell are you bunting in the first inning? Playing for one run on a squeeze bunt in the first inning on the road against a team that is already in their bullpen? Unconscionable.
Yeah.
You are literally saying we do not belong here and we do not believe we can hold you off.
Which would counter exactly what Rosario and Dozier did. They acted like they belonged there.
That they did belong
there. Yeah. I'll say this. Even looking at the score, I think the Twins looked like they belonged. They just looked like the inferior team. Like, they just played a team that's better than
them. That was what my column said was, it has nothing to do with 91 losses in 15 years. It has nothing to do with the ghost of Ron Gardenhire as a manager or Joe Mauer and Justin Morneau not getting it done.
Yeah.
They were the inferior team playing on the road. Like, they didn't have the horses to keep up. You can win on any – it's the any given Sunday theory where the Braves and the Phillies beat the Dodgers three times this year each out of seven games.
Right.
Those teams are going to draft in the top 10 in the MLB draft.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that they are going to lose every – they're not going to lose every single time against the Dodgers like the Twins did, but they only played them three times. But the best team won. If you overlook that and try to micromanage it, and again, with the benefit of hindsight, you have to think of those decisions when they're happening. You cannot bunt in the first inning.
Actually, you know what? It goes back to that Mahler line. I think he talks more about winning in stretches, but it also could be kind of keeping the rally going. He says you kind of have to get greedy when it's good or whatever. He has that line.
It's getting greedy while the getting is good.
Yeah, and I was actually worried Mahler would do exactly what the Twitter pitchfork people.
I thought Escobar was going to bunt later in the game too, and he didn't. He swung away.
Yeah,
they didn't bunt once last night.
I think Mulder did as well as he could have. I mean,
I think there's
moves anytime, even with Girardi and them winning. You know, I'm sure there's people in New York questioning some moves or whatever. But they lost to again, kind of that. You see the final boss right away, and you hope that no guarantee, but that the Twins, under different conditions, we always know, we all know New York, number one TV market, the history of winning there, just how many experts they have around there, and how much talent they have on that team. But the Twins, in their own way, hopefully mostly through draft and development, and then supplementing through free agency, which they should do with their new stadium.
And we'll talk about the offseason plan here before we log off as well.
But they can go. There's no guarantee. You got to put in the hours. You got to put in the time. You got to grind. But you can go and eventually be kind of the quote-unquote final boss. And that shouldn't discount, really. I like Houston. I like Cleveland. I mean, this is going to be a fun. I'm going to be as engaged in the playoffs regardless now that the Twins are not in it.
Agreed.
But, I looked at it and I said, look, they didn't look scared. They just looked overmatched. And that's a big difference. If you're worried, then you've lost already.
There was no scared. No.
Yeah. And so I'm encouraged, I guess, is the best word to use. I do believe, as much as kind of 83 looked fluky 2 years ago, they did seem to kind of pick up from there. And they are picking up from where 2010 was. This is kind of, at least for me, what I thought 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, you know what I mean? All the way up to now was going to be like, where they kind of would just make progress, make progress, make progress, instead of seeing the whole thing come apart and then, you know, go through essentially 93 through 2000 again. So, I come away from it encouraged, and I come away from it thinking they got a lot of work to do. You got to have a serious conversation about your pitching staff. You have to see. I like that Mauder seemed patient with his relievers, and at one point probably realized this is in part I'm trying to steal a game here. When it became very unlikely that he could, we knew once the Yankees got ahead, it was so huge to get that for them to get that inning right away, because once they get ahead, it's so hard to beat them. But I also look, it's a little bit of him learning and the organization learning about the relievers. And I think it's a little bit, they need that experience, because if Taylor Rogers is part of the future, he's got to execute in big moments. Same with Alan Buesnitz. And
but, I mean, luckily Hildenberger. They got 3 games worth of experience. I'm making a joke. The game was so long, it felt like 3 games.
Oh, I know.
Play.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. No. I mean, granted, it picked up some speed as the line moved, but
and with Berrios, I kind of looked at it like this is a weird situation for him. Again, he has to be able to handle that pressure. He's got to be the guy eventually to go out and deal when.
Well, I mean,
you're
not starting him over Santana, but you don't want to lose without using him. So it's pretty much the only choice you had. And there's no second guessing starting Santana, I don't think.
No, and the idea that, he had so much confidence. He said, I'm going to get that one. If he was 0-5 in Yankee Stadium, I think. I'm going to get that one win tomorrow. That is kind of who he is.
Well, the difference is saying it versus believing it. He usually wouldn't say that. He just said it because the stakes were that high.
Yeah.
Players always believe that. They always believe they're going to win.
The way I describe it is I've seen good and bad games live and on TV. And I see him almost every day in the clubhouse just because, as you know, his locker is right there when you walk in.
To the right, yep.
And he's always kind of the same guy. You know, he's always kind of that friendly, very kind of quiet confidence is the wrong word, but he's very confident without being kind of overly cocky, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can totally see it.
And just kind of, he's kind of a chill guy. I think he was himself before that game. And he didn't deliver, but look, any scouting report would have told you he's a little homer prone. It's pretty easy to hit him in Yankee Stadium. They got power in that lineup.
And he didn't locate.
And so he did not deliver. He should have been better. But I go back to, I think at some point I realized I did not expect it to be this high scoring. The email chain between me and Galfan was him going, well, there goes my under 7.5 runs.
Yeah, well, I bet he took that and it was gone within... Yeah. An hour.
Yeah.
I mean, 3 innings for sure.
Yeah. And, at the same time, I was like, I really am just curious if those lefties can kind of get through this bullpen, given literally the hand that the best bullpen guys throw with.
Yeah.
I even go back to you'd like to see Mauer get a hold of that one that landed on the warning track. But I like that his idea was, I'm going to go for it.
It would have been called foul anyway.
Right.
Okay, so there was a take, though. I want to jump into this. If
go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there was a gif that Jason Castro was at fault for the 3-run homer on a pitch he could not, quote-unquote, frame that was in the strike zone. And... again, I think it's a misrepresentation of what pitch framing means. And so basically, Castro sets up basically towards the right-handed hitter's box outside corner. Santana misses, I think it was 95, on the other batter's box in the bottom right. I guess if Castro's facing against the bottom right quadrant of the strike zone, and when he catches it, he kind of... I wouldn't even call it drifts because of how fast he had to move. Drags the ball out of the zone. It's called a ball. You look at the pitch effects or the Fox tracks or whatever they call it on ESPN. Should have been a strike. And all of a sudden it's, oh my gosh, how could Castro not have framed that? I thought he was this great pitch framer. And it's like, hang on a second. First of all, that's not what pitch framing is. Pitch framing, the art of massaging the strike zone, so to speak, is not in a vacuum making sure that pitchers get strikes on pitches out of the zone in addition to all pitches in the zone. It's not magic. It's not physics magic. And so
magic.
basically the old adage is if you miss your spot by 2 feet, you can't expect to get the call.
Yeah.
Now, if the pitch is in the zone, it really shouldn't matter if you missed your spot or not, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in theory. But what a catcher has to deal with in terms of physics to move his glove 3 feet across the plate.
Yeah.
While still, first and foremost, catching the ball, which he has agreed, unintentionally or intentionally, to protect the umpire from getting hit. If he doesn't catch that ball, he tries to frame it and misses it and hits the umpire. That's probably not great. The physics of framing that are impossible. Framing is receiving pitches quietly. That is that pop of the glove, because you have it to the spot where the ball is going before it gets there, and then you can massage it a little bit by catching it, you know, at the end of your wrist or the end of the webbing or however you're going to do it. The physics of a 95-mile-per-hour pitch 2 feet away from where you expected it, nobody has the body control to do that quietly. It's going to be loud no matter what in terms of a stab or a fast movement. You don't have the body control to stop that. And even if you could stop that, it's not going to be subtle. So, again, the idea that Castro screwed up, Castro is the third person to blame for this situation. Santana, first and foremost.
Yeah, just missed a spot.
Missed his spot by 2 feet.
Yeah.
And he did that a lot last night. And that's why I don't think it was a moment thing. I just think his location was spotty. I don't have his stats in front of me because I didn't bring
up
that.
He had games like this in the regular season. I understand, a lot of people don't watch the regular season.
I don't think his walk rate was particularly good. He didn't strike out enough batters to really look like an ace, which was another tweet of mine that got me in a lot of hot water, because I said, oh, yeah, totally an ace, guys. And again, it wasn't me overreacting to how he pitched in one game. It was more, guys, like, he's had games like this all season long.
Yeah.
How can you call him an ace when he does that? And everyone's like, well, he got six times as many outs as Severino. They took Severino out because, first of all, if you dig a hole like that and you're the favored team, you have to do something. You have to start throwing
Girardi literally would have gotten eaten alive.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my
Beyond
God.
Beyond that, you have the bullpen. Beyond that, you have the fact that it was sequencing. If Santana gets into a three-run hole early, and Molitor has even one guy like Chad Green that he trusts, the shoe's on the other foot. The idea that Santana outpitched Severino because he went two innings instead of a third of an inning, it's not a thing. It's not a thing. So, back to the play at hand, Castro is first of all, he's after Santana. I think Santana's number one to blame for missing the spot. Two, the umpire, you can call umpire 1B if Santana's 1A. The umpire didn't call a strike on a pitch that was in the zone. It was Marquez. Alfonso Marquez?
I can look it up. That sounds right.
Very much maligned umpire. People said the zone was tight last night. Again, if the zone's tight but it's consistent, people are not going to get too wound up. So there's always going to be more focus on postseason games because everyone's watching as well. But Castro is number three, or at least very, you know, number two behind 1A and 1B. I really can't fault him at all. That's a fundamental misunderstanding of what pitch framing is, that he didn't frame a ball that he had no business framing. And
it also seems a little bit like a regular season thing. Like, that stuff adds up over 162 games. It may not be as influential. It should help in the playoffs. But, no, I think that's a really good point. I didn't even think about this. Thank God I just avoided Twitter.com.
You should have, and I should have. I didn't, but
should have. This is like I'm going to make a quick – get Mike Gelfand, by the way, long time – he covered the Twins in the 70s, so Gene Mock, the Rod Crew actually threatened
to kill him. The Roy Smalley
–
Roy Smalley's uncle.
My favorite – I'm sure I told this on the podcast, but literally at one point, Smalley, and everyone kind of knows who he is, right, from being on the broadcast and all this. He's a public figure. You know, very happy, affable. I really do like his analysis, and I just like how kind of approachable he is, I guess, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
He sits down with Mike, young Mike Gelfand, he's like, why are you just so negative, man?
I can see that. That interaction taking place.
Yeah.
I can see that interaction taking place today.
Yes, yes.
Not young man, I guess.
Yes. But. So Mike goes off about the broadcasters, and I have the same opinion of Twitter.com as I do of the people in the broadcast booth.
Mm-hmm.
They are easily muted. It is easily not part of your life. And it is different.
Someday I'll learn that.
Well, I mean, the other thing is, I would say I approach this more as like a feature writer, where you approach it as, you know, if you're game by game, you almost have to use it for your job. It's just like, it's such a Phil Miller, by the way, famously does not follow anyone, right?
Zero followers. He followed one for a couple days, and it was like Echophone, which is like the, I think the app he uses for Twitter on his phone.
Yeah.
And it was because when he downloaded it, it had a box checked, like automatically follow Echophone, you know, is... It's just like when you are automatically checked onto a box to
get promotional
emails from, you know, whatever site you're on, but, you know, Amazon.com or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, the way I look at it is, it was a late night, by the way. That was a yawn. I mean, you're going to get kind of, you know, I told Mike what's going on about the broadcast booth, and I said, look, he does this with the local and the national guys.
Mm-hmm.
I literally use it almost as something to clue me in if there's something going on that I wouldn't see otherwise. But oftentimes it's almost kind of white noise to me, and it's not very loud on my TV screen. And
it is. It's soothing. It's like, it's like Vin Scully. If you didn't listen to what he said, he would still be able to soothe you to sleep, not put you to sleep. Completely different. But you could be soothed to sleep by, I guess, the dulcet tones of Vin Scully.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I go back to, actually, I like Smalley. I feel like that's, he adds, you know, to your knowledge of baseball, but which is kind of their job. But
They don't all.
Right. Regardless, I know people, and actually, it was an interesting, it became actually a constructive conversation. I do discuss media at large with him often. Obviously, that's his role with the site, training us and stuff. Not just the technical, you know, like...
X's and O's,
but media at large and what everyone's role is and stuff. My preference, generally speaking, as a general principle, if I was running ESPN or Fox, would be I'd put a host who could kind of be of any cloth, but understands their role, a journalist, an ex-player. Because I think...
In the booth, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you have a guy like Rosenthal or Verducci or whatever... That person looks at it differently from the ex-player, looks at it differently from the host who's kind of keeping the broadcast.
Do you need a third person if Buster's on the field?
No, I mean, probably not.
Okay.
No. And actually, you could say the same thing with Rosenthal or Verducci, who do, you know, have those roles.
Yeah. I'm saying, in this case, that Buster, Verducci, Ken are, you could switch and swap. I mean, each of those is going to have different strengths, but for all intents and purposes, I think they each provide value. It's not the same value, but they provide value.
And it should be, we go back and forth with this. It should be more conversational in my mind. This is not hockey where it's a sudden movement here and there. And it's, you know, basketball is kind of the same way. Like, it should be a little, maybe not as much in the playoffs, but a little bit about storytelling. Also, just informing people who these guys are. Because for the Twins, we're very familiar with them. You don't even have to go to the national stage to find people who, I mean, we did our staff podcast and just asking, you know, we had Tim, our basketball writer, Arif, and Luke, our football guys. They can name five guys on this team.
Yeah.
You know, and so give some background on who these guys are, how they came up, kind of, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, Rosario may have heard of just because he was a big prospect.
But this is always my theory that the Fox Saturday game should have been one national guy, one local guy.
Yeah, and actually that's...
And they've got a little bit of that, but I mean, if it's...
Also, put Roy Small... Everyone knows who Roy Small... Or not everyone, but baseball fans know who he is.
Yeah. But find players who have insight. If it's just hot air coming out or a buzzing sound coming out of their mouth, or if they're reading from the media guide, forget it. There's just no value in that. It's a well-paid position.
Yeah.
Find someone who will dedicate themselves to educating fans, please.
I just, and actually a guy who played for both the Twins and the Yankees would kind of make sense for this game.
Bingo!
Right. But
it was between the two stints of the Twins, he was at the Yankees, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was Rangers, Twins, Yankees, Twins,
I think that's right.
I think he actually held the shortstop record for home runs and didn't Gregorius surpass it this year?
Right.
I mean, Gregorius hitting... cleanup, which kind of blows your mind, because when he was traded, came up in the system with, I think, the Diamondbacks, like, he was going to be a glove-only shortstop.
Hmm.
Like,
I didn't know that.
Thought of him as more of a Jose Iglesias type. Maybe I'm remembering wrong, but I feel like he was believed to be a glove-first guy that might hit.
Listen, I grew up hating the Yankees. I actually lived in New York for a few years, and I disliked them even more.
Yeah.
Aaron Judge with a different organization would not be the player he is now. He came up and he had a massive strike zone and whiffed a lot, you know? I really think, you know, they do a good job, you know, supplementing. I assume they're going to go after Harper. I'm assuming that they're going to make a splash at some point.
Manny Machado, maybe.
Yeah, making a splash because the Yankees. But even going back to the core four era, they've often done it around their own guys.
Or lower priced veterans, Paul O'Neill, Scott Brosius.
Yeah.
It hasn't always been about superstars.
Yeah.
It hasn't.
Yeah, yeah. And so as much as...
Tino Martinez.
Yeah, you know, again, and he's very beloved in New York.
Yeah, they won with veteran glue guys as much as it was about superstars like A-Rod, Giambi, and Jeter.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, I go back to, you know, when I was writing my preview, I tried to kind of put it in perspective and be like, this will be very hard to win. They're not supposed to. Not mm-hmm. that everything in baseball goes as according to plan, but it's so funny how the internet is just flooded with anyone can win the AL. Anyone can win. And it's kind of true. Anyone can win the NL.
Well, if you watch the second half, it kind of bore out.
But, you know, generally speaking, this is a game that kind of went according to script. But, I'll take the broader approach the same way. The Twins can't get there. Yes, you have to have hard conversations about kind of shortstop, and is that Polanco, Nick Gordon, whatever. I'm curious what they do with catcher. I like Castro. I think that you can improve there down the line. I don't think that's an immediate deal, but mm-hmm. How good is Garver, actually, for example? And
maybe a platoon guy for Castro, but I digress.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, there's hard conversations, especially with pitching. The good thing is they have talent there in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. Who ends up kind of handling it mentally? I think Presley has gas. I think Buesnitz has gas. I really like what I saw from Hildenberger this year. I think Rogers maybe was a little overused early on. You know, he was steady and kind of the go-to guy for a while.
It's worth wondering if they need one great player to kind of lift the water level for the rest of them as far as pushing them into roles they're better off. I mean, should Alan Buesnitz throw the seventh inning of a wild card game?
Right.
At this point, maybe not.
Yeah.
In 2 years, maybe. Should Trevor Hildenberger throw the ninth inning of a game like that? Maybe. But if you have someone to lean on in the ninth inning, the Glenn Perkins of old.
Yeah.
But basically, bullpen moves they take out the worst reliever rather than your best. And so everyone gets bumped up a notch, and it helps everybody. You can't go toe-to-toe with the Yankees. You just got to do your own thing.
The other argument for that is that it's funny that I asked Mulder pretty early on after they had traded Kinsler if he was willing to go to a less traditional bullpen and more so setup guy closer and more just have a leverage guy. Use your best reliever in the highest leverage situation.
Kind of like the Yankees did last night.
Yeah. And he was kind of like, no. Like, it was just like, that's kind of weird.
You have to find guys willing to do that.
Yeah.
It's hard.
But
it's
so here's my point, though. He used Hildenberger like that and addressed that and said, this is what I'm doing with Trevor Hildenberger. This is obviously, you know, like when he came up and made this big splash. It wouldn't be a terrible idea to have a traditional closer, a traditional setup guy. Going back to conversations I've had with Glenn Perkins, I'm sure you've had the similar deal. He said he needed that. Like, he needed to know I'm in the ninth inning or maybe doing the four out save or whatever, but I need
for the routine. He needs
it. It's the and every good player is routine oriented. I need to see it on TV, pick up little insights, even something dumb like this would not be a playoff game, hopefully. But hey, is this guy hungover? Is this a young player?
You know? Like his sixth inning cup of coffee before stretching in the seventh.
Throwing
in the eighth, pitching in the ninth.
Yeah,
like there are guys who can and can't.
Yeah,
but then you also want to have a Chris Devensky type, like maybe Tyler Duffy, who throws. Gets the righty out that ends the sixth inning, pitches the whole seventh, and then in the eighth, faces the first guy. And then if he falters, you have a ground ball type guy like Kinsler to get a double play.
Yeah.
You can massage guys if you don't have five flamethrowers like Girardi does.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the art of putting this bullpen together, whether it's with guys like John Curtis, Gabriel Moya ascending.
I like that Moya came up, actually. That means it probably was a good trade. I don't know.
I think it was. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you're never going to undo the Aaron Hicks for
John Ryan
Murphy.
Oh, my God. How much do you want Aaron Hicks on this team right now?
I mean, granted, Aaron Hicks on this team might be superfluous.
Yeah.
But he'd be a good platoon partner for Max Kepler. He could.
Yeah.
you know, you could do a lot of things. You could play Max Kepler at first base, Joe Mauer DH.
Yeah.
Joe Mauer's a good first baseman, but there's
some concerns with he's 24. I think he can work out of him. That was actually part of our conversation.
But you could do a lot of different things with Aaron Hicks on this team.
Yeah.
Including bat him leadoff.
Although, is it Mike Exisa?
We had him on the show for previewed.
He was saying that he thought John Ryan Murphy was an everyday player, and this is going way down a rabbit hole. I don't want to go down.
Oh, yeah, but it's all hindsight.
Trying to remember. So, I don't mind the idea of having Hildenberger be your high leverage guy. That he's not your traditional setup.
He also doesn't mind it. I can say that. I talked to him about it.
Yeah, and I think his head is on straight, and that's so important. Like, look, there's 100 guys with stuff. You know, I mean, if you get to that level, you can probably throw pretty hard and have a nice off-speed pitch.
You have something. You have something that puts you there.
I like the idea of having that, and then you can build, if those are your three guys, you can build around that. I know people are upset about the Kinsler thing. I've had to say 100 times, they did not give up on the season. It's probably not smart to get rid of a starter, and I know how Garcia did outside of literally the game the Twins played him.
Let's be honest, though, he wouldn't have pitched last night for the Twins anyway.
Yeah.
Starter, reliever, anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So big deal.
And with Kinsler, I think he is a good bullpen piece. I don't know. I don't see him as a closer on a phenomenal.
If the Twins bring him back and put him in the seventh or eighth inning, I'd be all about that.
Yeah, and he may come back. I got to know him a little bit.
Here's the thing, though. We don't know where this brass falls on him because they didn't sign him.
Yeah, it's true.
He's also over 30. So,
depends on how much money he actually asks for. But, like, if it's a low-risk signing and he wants to come back,
if it's $5 million per year for 2 years,
yeah,
I got no problem with that.
If anything, you actually worry about the term more than the money there. But,
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But they're not signing four relievers. People want them to sign four relievers.
No, I know. And
they
might sign one
or maybe two, and even then I still feel it's going to be, like, not what fans want.
Yeah.
They want you to go out and sign the best guy on the market.
No. What the guys who need to step up are the guys who got a cup of tea already. It's the Curtises, it's the Moyas, it's the
Mason Mellitakis, the guy who didn't get that jump.
Yeah.
The Nick Turleys, the guys who are on the fringes.
Yeah.
You might get one really good reliever and then, you know, mix and match. You need guys to ascend. You need Nick Birdie to get healthy. You need Jake Reed to be that next guy.
Yeah.
Lots of guys. There's lots of guys.
I agree there. Where I would actually see maybe Gonsalves filling a hole there in the
or Fernando Romero if he's ready and maybe they move Gibson to the bullpen eventually or Trevor May. Let's not forget about Trevor May.
Yeah.
Let's not forget about Ryan O'Rourke who's going to get healthy. You know.
Yeah, Ryan O'Rourke's a nice piece. I would hope May and Gibson are in the starting rotation.
You would hope, but if you got too many guys,
yeah,
you know, too many cooks.
Can you imagine that?
Too many cooks.
Oh, and I was going to say too many Twins. Good Twins pitchers is kind of a funny concept, but
yeah, it's a misnomer. We've never seen that.
So the point being though is like, if you're gonna make a splurge, if you're very confident, I just look at how many the Jake Arrieta's and kind of the guys of that ilk who change the scenery and they reach their potential.
Corey Kluber was not
Kluber
a star before he came over.
Yeah,
the Indians found him. I thought they were trying to do that with like a Nick Turley and a Drew Rosinski, some guys who in the minors had numbers and try to figure it out. I still think that's the goal. I think they're going to try find their guy. They're not going to go out. I don't think they're giving $20 million or $25 million to Yu Darvish.
No. And
Shohei Ohtani, I don't think he's coming to Minneapolis.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It would be
bananas.
It'd be a statement signing kind of.
Yeah. Well, I'd be all about it, but I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. But where I'm going is maybe find a guy who, like, people like, huh? And you're like, well, he was a top prospect. And
Tyler Chatwood is the guy that I'm kind of in on. Look at his numbers away from Coors. I'll pull him up while you...
And also, Coors Field, to be clear, people focus on... They pressurize the ball and the air.
The humidor and all
there,
that.
There's a lot... Stuff. There's more than that. It's like your off-speed stuff doesn't
cut as
well.
There's also mental, like, the mental... Yeah. So Chatwood this year, 4.69 ERA, so not exactly nice. if you look at the splits, though, for 2017, here's how he pitched at Coors Field. I'm just waiting for this to load. 6.01 ERA, 1.68 whip. Guess what he did on the road? 3.49 ERA, 7.2 strikeouts per nine, and a 1.23 whip. It's Irvin Santana is basically what it is. If you can, he's a ground ball guy. Again, you're The Twins are not catered as much for ground ball guys as they are fly ball guys. But you want to stay away because the outfield defense is so good. But you want to stay away from fly balls because of the juiced baseball and because those things just fly balls do more damage. Going and getting a ground ball guy who's got the best baseball in front of him possibly on a lower deal makes a ton of sense.
That's
a ton of sense, especially if it's that Phil Hughes contract, 3 years, $24 million. Not the second Phil Hughes contract.
Don't extend him. Yeah.
But we're getting away from it. I think they're going to have to go find their next pitcher. I did want to ask you, though. You were kind of intimating the booth being too crowded.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to talk about Jess Mendoza.
Yeah. No.
So it's a lightning rod situation with Jess Mendoza. Chauvinists don't want women in their baseball. They want them in the kitchen, and it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And if she used a voice changer for a male voice, people would be like, oh, this person's amazing.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, well, because she does, she does in general do a terrific job. I felt like she got lost in the shuffle last night, and again, that's not indicative of her talent. But I don't know if the three-person booth was too much. I don't know.
It's weird. It's who she works with. She's always with Boone, and then
Showman.
I think it was
Dan Showman. I think that's who it was. Basically, there were just large swaths of the game where she just wasn't. You didn't hear her voice. And I think it's hard to get a rhythm as a broadcaster if you're not saying that much.
Yeah.
And so I felt like I understood the role she played, but I almost feel like she was underutilized.
Yeah.
And I don't want to come across as saying I don't think she's deserving.
Yeah.
Because I think she's done a terrific job.
Yeah.
But I just never felt like she was in a really strong rhythm last night to the point where I was like, she's adding to this thing that they needed that third person in addition to Buster on the field. And again, that's not me saying I don't want to see Jess Mendoza do games. I think she does a terrific job, and it has nothing to do with her gender or anything.
Sure,
I think she does a great job. And then most of the play-by-play guys and women, they didn't play the game. Like, they didn't play big league baseball. Dick Bremer didn't play big league baseball, you know? So it doesn't matter to me whether someone plays or not. You will get unique insights from former players who want to give you them. There are a lot of former big leaguers that will not give you any insight and are a waste of space in broadcast booths. So I don't care about her playing experience.
Sure.
I think she does a great job. I just felt like she got lost in the shuffle last night, and it's unfortunate. It really is.
Yeah. A lot of thoughts here.
Lots to unpack.
Right. So I'll start with this. I heard her on Richard Deitch's podcast a while ago. I listen all the time because a lot of it's relevant to what I do for zone coverage. But I also listen to the other stuff like this, where I'm obviously not running a broadcast, right? But she said her role is primarily to watch film, to provide insights there. I think that's incredibly valuable. If you can say, here's a hitch in a guy's swing, the arm slot's in the wrong spot, try to explain that. I kind of describe that kind of insight a little bit like analytics. If you overdo it and get too far in the weeds, you're going to completely lose people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing on a podcast, for example. You know, in writing, it's a lot easier to kind of...
explains our listenership numbers.
Right. But in all seriousness, it should be an element. But if you're really getting in the weeds, you probably should be writing it because, you know, it's easier to digest.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with this. If you get way too into that, people are going to be like, yeah, I don't know what's going on here. I think the problem with any ex-player, and especially with an ex-softball player, is that some of these guys lean way too far back on their playing experience. I think there are guys who are really good, especially younger players who are either still playing and not in the postseason.
Yeah,
like Chris
AJ
Archer.
Pierzynski's Archer's. Yeah. Like back, Pierzynski a few years ago, Archer now.
Yeah.
Gabe Kapler, I thought, and he's my guy, but A-Rod is magnificent.
A-Rod's so good. I mean, don't even want to admit that, but yes, he's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, so some of those guys are helpful. Some of them literally go, I played the game, I have a dumb take, and you should listen to it. You know what I mean? It's a little bit like, come on, you know? But
It's frozen caveman lawyer in a broadcast booth.
Yeah. And she just can't do that because I think the issue is then anyone who's on the fence with her will go, well, it's a different sport. And you know what I mean? And that is pretty fair.
She's also punching against society.
Yes.
By definition, not because...
And she knew that going into it. I mean,
Not because of anything that she has done. It's just that it's just an ingrained mentality in that kind of thing.
Yeah, and so I'm fine with ESPN. Again, I told you the template I like. It's host, it's journalist.
Yeah, they hired Katie Nolan today too, which,
yeah, which I'm
another day, another conversation.
Yeah,
but
big hire. Yeah. Also, another person just doesn't take crap for anyone. But yeah, I mean, I think if she's breaking down film, look, she's watching it with Boone, from what she said on the show. And aside from that, there's people in this market and nationally who do a really good job breaking down film and didn't play the game, right? So, mm-hmm. or didn't play at like a really high level. So I'm fine with that. And I like the insight there. You're right. She did get a little lost there. I think sometimes there's a tendency for every ex player to lean back on that and get away from kind of the prep they did going in.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I really think that some of this time when they were talking about other stuff, they could have been, it's going to be Yankee focused because it's a national broadcast and you know how many, you know, there's
and it's in New York besides.
And it's in New York. I do think, look, just as you should introduce Gary Sanchez to people, now people should know who he is, but, you know, he's a younger player, or Aaron Judge, or some of the new Yankee players.
Mm-hmm.
With the Twins, you got to kind of contextualize, like, who is Rosario? Because we know that really well. Like,
right.
We've discussed Rosario ad nauseum. But
it's part of why we get sick of the Prince mentions every time there's an NFL football game. An NFL game. Or the spoon in the sculpture garden.
Yes.
They explain the other city or the home city.
Yeah.
And I think baseball does struggle with that.
And then it's really important with just, and again, you're never going to please everyone with how you do it, but who Maurer is. And just like he is the only connection with that 2010 team other than Perkins, who we, you know, was not on the roster.
He was there, but yeah, not on the roster.
Yeah. And, just kind of his relationship with the Yankees, because for him, like, this is his chance at kind of in his 30s to hopefully correct, you know, his record against the Yankees.
Yeah.
And just this will get completely lost because of what happened after, you know, in the 2011 season. But at one point, there were people in New York saying, we're not going to let you out of the city limits. Like, you're coming here. You're going to be in pinstripes.
Mm-hmm.
Like many other great, as we all know, Twins players yesteryear that go on to play in New York, LA, whatever. So, you know, I think you can contextualize that, explain who Dozier is, who Rosario is. You know, again, Santana's a known commodity, but Berrios and maybe the bullpen at large.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they did that at times, and I know I didn't listen incredibly intently, but having said that, too, it wouldn't hurt to have a little more breakdown of swings and stuff
like
that.
Yeah, but I feel what helpful. We're getting at here is the broadcast could have been better, whether it was explaining twin stuff or utilizing Mendoza better. I think
that's the takeaway point. And that's a good way to summarize it. I don't need to labor this point at all. I also tell you, if you don't like it, just literally, I literally turn it down. And
it might not be for you. Not everything has to be for you. That's why I don't get all that upset that there isn't, you know, weighted on base average on the screen when Joe Maurer comes up.
Right.
Maybe that part of the game is not for me. Okay, so what I wanted to get to, Chip Scoggins had a tweet. It's ridiculous that Molitor's status is still being debated. He deserves a contract extension to continue with this group. He earned it. We'll touch on that in just a second here, but a mention of that was Falvey and Levine are lost. Could have moved on an ace like Verlander, but passed.
Oh, God.
Expressed no confidence in this team. There's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah.
In a vacuum, Justin Verlander, as a pitcher, hell yes, you want him on the Twins. The Twins need pitching. He's a great pitcher.
Yeah. Also, yeah.
You want Justin Verlander. He would be great on the Twins. Boom. So that's a defensible take in a vacuum. He's making $20-some million for, I think...
next 2 years, I believe.
Is it 2 years? It might even be 2 years after this. I'm not sure. So, okay. That's a sticking point, right? Because
he'll make 20 mil next season, 20 mil this season.
His worst baseball is in front of him, in theory. I mean, just because he's won Cy Young Awards.
Yeah.
So you're taking a pretty big risk. Again, would you sign Justin Verlander to a 2-year, $40 million deal or two and a half year, $50 million? Yeah. I mean, probably. Yeah. He'd get that on the free agent market. But that's a sticking point already. Money. The Twins are probably not going to do that. Number two. I'm trying to figure out which one I'm going to go with. prospects.
Yeah.
The Astros gave up still prospects. I don't know that they got the Tigers to pay their... I think they might have paid some of it. I don't know. But
pay some of Verlander's contract.
So they gave up significant prospects, including Daz Cameron, who a lot of people thought the Twins had taken when they took Tyler J. In fact, there was a report out there that the Twins had taken Das Cameron. And then I was like, oh, no, they took Tyler J.
Yeah.
Das Cameron is Mike Cameron's son. He struggled a little bit as a pro, but still obviously very well regarded. And some other prospects. The Astros have the prospects to burn fine. Twins, obviously less so. Less apt to give up prospects for a guy like that with all the risk. Number three, and the most important part, there is no bleeping way Justin Verlander is waiving his no-trade clause to go to the Minnesota Twins. He almost didn't leave for Houston, who spent the whole year as the number one team in the American League.
Yeah.
He almost didn't leave the smoldering ruins of the Detroit Tigers, who the Twins saw and brutalized six times in September. If the Tigers aren't on the Twins schedule in September, they maybe don't even make the postseason. Let's not forget that. Verlander almost didn't say yes. In fact, the initial report was that he said, no, I will go down with this ship in Detroit. Yeah. There is no way he's waiving that no-trade clause. Now, again, Verlander is actually the perfect name to bring up in this scenario because the Twins aren't trading for any big starting pitcher at July 31st. They were four games under 500, three games under 500, whatever it was, 4% playoff odds.
Yeah.
Verlander got moved during August when the Twins won 20 games. Their playoff odds started to skyrocket. Okay, fine. If you're ever going to get an ace in a trade, pay the price to trade for one. Verlander's name makes total sense. The salary that conspired so that he cleared waivers in the first place. Okay, boom, you're in the driver's seat. At least Verlander makes sense. It's not like Chris Archer, who we'll get to in just a second here. You know, Archer's not clearing waivers. He's got a reasonable deal, whatever.
Yeah.
A guy like Verlander cleared because of his salary, so I totally get all that. It all makes sense. But the dude is not leaving Detroit for Minnesota. There is no freaking way.
Yeah.
And this is like a legit take is, they express no confidence in this team. What do you mean expressing confidence in this team is saying, you guys got us here with this roster.
Yeah.
We're going to let you guys get us wherever we're going.
Yeah. I mean,
confidence swings both ways, guys.
If there was no confidence, going back to the Kinsler deal, they would have traded Irvin and Dozier. I mean,
that would have signaled this can't happen.
They were indecisive. I think that's the correct word.
But I think they deserved it.
No team in this
wild card era that has started in 2012 has ever had 4% playoff odds after the trade deadline.
Or lost 100 games the year before and going to the playoffs.
There was one team that was like 8 or 9% in early August in this era. No, they took a measured, cautious approach. They kept the core intact, and the team played 600 baseball, 100-win pace for 6 or 7 weeks. Give them credit that they said, hey, whatever you guys got to do to get the postseason, you're going to do it with the guys you have, less a couple guys who you don't need.
Yeah. So, some context. We got an audience here.
Yeah, I guess so. Didn't know that.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's an 85-win team. They literally lost to the A's and the Padres before that trade deadline.
They made their bed and laid in it.
Also, if this is the fifth time they played the Yankees in the playoffs, let's say, and you're worried about Buxton getting a little old and Sano getting a little old and this and that, it's a little different. Then I think you push all your chips in the middle. And you go, we're going to go get it.
And see, for the Astros, they've already been to the summit. They need to get to the next step.
Expected is maybe the wrong word. Was it 3 years ago that SI said this is the 2017 world champions?
Mm-hmm.
And we know what they did, burning it all down, building it back up, good draft picks, using a lot of analytics to build their team.
Yeah, I mean, they drafted Carlos Correa in front of Buxton. They've done some things right.
And you got Springer. And I mean, it's amazing.
Former Twins draft pick George Springer, I might add.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, back to what you were saying.
Yeah. I hear the torches.
I feel the heat.
Yeah. The way I look at it is this team, I believe, overachieved. I believe is a foundation they can build on. This is not a complete product by any means, but it is a foundation you can build on.
Mm-hmm.
And the money should not be an issue. I actually think this is pointed out that, like, what Houston has with Verlander is actually very smart. Like, it is a reasonable amount of money to pay a guy that accomplished for what... I mean, him being in their rotation, to me, gives me the confidence to put them and the Dodgers in the World Series, although I could see Cleveland doing it, and be a really fun story if Cleveland
won. Or, hell,
won.
The Yankees. Or the Red Sox. I mean,
yeah, yes, yes.
I don't feel... But
they'd be pretty shorthanded, I think, without him.
The smell test.
Yeah, I really think that was a huge pickup, and that makes a lot of sense for the Houston Astros. The Twins at some point may need to make a splash for an ace pitcher, for a shortstop, maybe both. But let's cross that bridge when we get to it. I think this is a good first step, and I think that should be – they're not – I don't think they're getting past the Yankees with Verlander. Yeah, maybe does better than Santana, but I don't know. Either way, it just is not the right move for them at that time. I go back to, yeah, you know, that Jaime Garcia trade will be – should be almost viewed in hindsight. It's a funny way to put it, but – if they get prospects for him, they literally laundered him like a not great pitcher, you know, not a great starter. If you don't get anything from him, you'd be like, yeah, down the stretch, it'd be nice to have another starter. It's also, baseball's weird. They lost the game they lost to the Tigers. Andrew Romine pitched to Miguel Sano, played catcher, played all nine positions. And I believe, wasn't it? No, Ian.
It was a 3-2 game.
Yeah, it was a 3-2 game. You know what I mean? And then literally otherwise blew him out of the water. And that's probably why they're in the playoffs. Also, look at what the Angels did at the deadline. I think Upton, and I don't know about Phillips, but I think they played pretty well.
They got Justin Upton at the waiver deadline.
Okay,
when Detroit blew everything up and then won like 5 or 6 games the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Again, I want to get in on this Archer stuff, too. We have a couple more takes, and then we'll fly here.
Yeah.
But the Tigers blew it up and then just basically folded down the stretch to the number one draft pick. Yeah. And it's like, that was pretty helpful for the Twins, considering they played the... you know, Cleveland in that stretch as well. The Angels went for it. And here's the other thing. Upton could opt in. I think he's got 4 years, $22 million on that deal if he opts in. They're still not sure if that's going to happen. I don't know if he gave assurances or if he gave overtures. Like, yeah, you know, I'm going to opt out. Because here's the other thing. The market's not great this year.
Yeah.
Next year is the market where you do not want to be a non-top-tier player because you will get lost in the wash with your Machados, your Harpers, so on and so forth. So I don't know if he'll opt out. You got J.D. Martinez out there. You got a few guys that are going to be great players. Another guy that the Tigers sold. The Verlander talk was dumb. The Archer talk is almost equally dumb for me. Again, I know Twins fans want an ace. They've been talking about wanting an ace since Johan Santana changed uniforms. And, you know, the hope was that Liriano was going to be that guy. And then, you know, so on and so forth. Archer, though, is preposterous for a lot of reasons. Because the people that are talking now are, well, trade Sano for him. First of all, who's playing third base for you if you trade Miguel Sano? Eduardo Escobar? You really think he's going to pop another 20-some home runs when they correct the unforeseen error that allowed the baseball to be as juiced as it was? Let's be honest with ourselves. Eduardo Escobar is a wonderful role player on a very good team. But playing all year long, you will have like a 305.
We've seen it before.
Yeah, you'll have a 305 on-base percentage, and he might slug 420. It's not a guy who can play third base a full season. You can maybe get by with a guy like that at short or second, not at third base. Like James Rousen says about hitting guys, you cannot take from a strength to patch over a weakness because then you're taking away from that strength. You need to create a foundation. So something that interests me would they trade Sano, move Dozier to third, bring Gordon up to play second? Makes sense to me, but you can't move Sano right now.
You might want to do it before he's 30.
The whole league thinks he's overweight and lazy because of the columns that have been written about him. It's not the time to move him. It's all takes. People want takes in the moment because they're frustrated that the team lost last night. Archer, back to Archer. Great pitcher, years of control. What's the incentive for the Rays to trade Archer? They also need pitching, cost control pitching. They're going to lose Alex Cobb in free agency, so that makes them even less deep. Blake Snell will probably come along, be a better pitcher, had a really great start to end his season. But the Rays don't need a third baseman, right? Evan Longoria.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. They're not paying Miguel Sano third base price to play him at first base.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, they have Logan Morrison, who had a really nice year. Okay. Yeah. So scratch first base. They are not paying third base price to trade for Miguel Sano to DH for them.
Yeah.
Like, there's no sense here. Keep in mind, too, if the Rays played the Detroit Tigers seven times in September, maybe the Rays are getting their butts kicked in the wild card game last night instead of the Twins.
Yeah.
The Rays as a team right now might be better than the Twins. If we look at base runs, all those secondary statistics, I'm going to pull that up once I hand it over to you as far as base runs. I bet the Rays had a better base runs mark this year than the Twins did. The Rays are probably a better team than the Twins right now. There's no reason for the Rays to be like, oh, got to part it out, going to rebuild. Like, they're better than the Twins. They may not be on the same ascent as the Twins, but people are clinging to names they've heard of. Chris Archer
Archer
is not happening, guys.
Just for reference, your Twins-Rays comparison, going back from the game they played most recently, which was September 6th, Twins won 10-6, Rays won 2-1, Rays won 11-4, Rays won 8-6, Twins won 5-3, Rays won 5-2. It seems like they're kind of even.
Let's see.
I mean, that's the head-to-head score.
2017 base run standings. I didn't know where to find it, so I had to Google it.
The difference, though, however...
Rays 80 and 82. Okay, no, that's actually the actual stats. Base runs, 87 and 75 for the Rays. For the Twins, 81 and 81. The Rays are a better team.
Yeah, now the difference is... The Rays are kind of like Metrodome Twins, where they're probably not going to do much in that stadium, kind of in their circumstances.
Yeah,
Target Field Twins should build on the foundation they have.
Yeah,
you know, the Rays kind of go for it, burn down, go for it, burn down, go for it. That's the cycle they're in, mm-hmm. and the Twins should be, let's build a foundation and try to open the window as large as you know.
They
as,
need to be the Cardinals.
Right. Yeah, completely.
Perpetually there. Take a risk when it's merited. Go trade for Jason Hayward. Go trade for Larry Walker.
Yeah.
Go sign Dexter Fowler.
Yeah.
You know, they need to be that team that's in hunt mode all the time. And now they're in hunt mode. They may lose Lance Lynn. They may not be able to afford to sign a replacement. They may not. They should go out and get a Moustakas or a Hosmer, which would be an amazing dynamic considering it's the I-80 series and all that. I mean,
but they
may not be able to stay relevant against the Cubs. What happens if the White Sox become the Cubs of the American League and the Twins can't compete?
They need to
be the Cardinals. They need to have a feeder system of a foundation that allows them to win at minimum 82 to 84 games every year with those spikes that get you to 90, 95.
Yeah, and pitching has been kind of the lifeblood of the cardiac cards. So, that's a good kind of model to build yourself off of. Just real quick to look at the division, kind of the future going forward. You know this better than me, but Cleveland, great manager all in this year. We'll talk to Chris from Cleveland, who I'm sure will just brag on the podcast whenever it's appropriate to talk to him, and he's sober enough to come on.
Maybe we should wait till they lose. Maybe they won't.
Right. To my knowledge, though, their window would be shutting kind of close after.
You mean Cleveland?
Season. Yeah. I mean, they're a little bit old, aren't they?
You know, with Kluber, Carrasco, it's hard to say. But...
Yeah, and you could probably reboot that. You know,
but Encarnacion's not going to play forever. Santana might be leaving after this year. Knock, knock. Maybe you can start with the Twins and DH for them.
I mean, that's the team they have to unseat, which is not improbable. You have Chicago on the rise with all these prospects. You have Kansas City, which were buyers, right? Or at least in theory.
They went and got they traded Travis Wood, who the Twins brutalized when the Padres were in town, and gave up, what was it, Matt Strom? For like some patches, and I don't have any idea what that was all about.
So, Kansas City probably is going to cycle down, which great run, right?
Especially World if they lose Dayton Moore back to the Braves. We'll see what happens there.
Yeah, and then Detroit is literally like just a dumpster fire. You know, they're going to have to just reboot the whole system. And so
the Tigers are pretty bad too.
Yeah.
That's I'm sorry, nice. Detroit. They don't want this to be a Burt Blyleven thing. I love Anthony Fenech. I'm not going to rip any of
and
those
actually,
guys,
the,
Jason
the
Beck.
The downtown, that ballpark I've been there, it's actually super nice. But either way, the Tigers are just going to have to reboot their system a little bit. So the Twins, and this is what I'll write about later this week, is like positive things, trending in the right direction. Yes, in 5 years, if they're still stuck here, they should push all their chips in, but they're not there yet.
Okay, well, I had originally planned to do an off-season preview, you know, as part of this pod, running a little bit hot and a little bit late right now, but I will close with this. I'm going to pose to you, and then I'll give my take.
Yep.
The first thing that this team has to do to start this off-season, I think you know where I'm going with this, is they have to address blank. What do you think it is?
Starting pitching? Is that too broad?
No, I'm saying Paul Molitor.
Oh, duh.
They need to decide if they're bringing Paul Molitor back. And again, the Scoggins take, and I have a lot of respect for Chip. Great call.
Yeah, I think he does a good feature,
but he's saying it's ridiculous that the Twins would consider not bringing him back. Oh, I don't know. Here's the deal. You know, there were some times I felt like the Twins won in spite of Molitor. I have the utmost respect for Molitor. He knows, he forgets more about baseball before he has his first cup of coffee and goes on his walk and listens to his Springsteen than I will ever know. So let me just get that out of the way. But I just feel like I think I would rather have Molitor as my bench coach and someone a little bit more, it might be Jeff Pickler, someone a little more analytically inclined as my manager. I think that the Bee Gees, that's what Clarence Swamptown calls them, the boy geniuses, I think they're going to want one of their guys, whether it's Sandy Alomar Jr. And again, I was the first one on the record as saying the Twins should hire Thad Levine. I won't hear any other way that someone has said Sandy Alomar Jr.'s name before me.
Yeah.
I was saying that last year.
Yeah.
So if the Twins move on from Molitor, it would not stun me. I'm not saying he deserves it.
Yeah.
But they have had 280-win teams, and he's still below 500 as a manager. How much do you penalize him for last year? They brought back the same entire team.
Yeah.
What did he do differently? What did these players do differently under him?
Torrey Hunter, 25-win player.
I mean, yeah, exactly. 25-war Hunter. you can't give Molitor too much credit for this year without penalizing him for last year. Is 2015 the tiebreaker? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I feel like if I'm 51-49, it's that there will be somebody else managing this team next year. But I don't feel confident saying one way or the other.
Yeah,
do you stand on it right now?
Yeah, I don't.
I think we'll know before the end of the week.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting.
Today, Wednesday?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll know by the end of the week.
It'd be interesting if he resigns, too, just because.
Or what if Pete Mackinnon or McCannon, the Phillies manager, Terry Collins, all those guys got reassigned in the organization. What if the Pollets say, look, we'll give you a similar salary. You can have that Kadir Hunter Hawkins role. You can do some broadcasting if you want.
Interesting.
We'll give you the same role, same salary as those guys, but you can stay home. You got young kids.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not trying to pry into Molitor's life. I'm not trying to say he shouldn't be the manager.
Yeah.
I'm just saying if they spin it as that, as Molitor's like, oh, you know, I'm over 60 and I got two kids under 12 years old or whatever it is, that doesn't sound bad. But then they also go get their guy, whether it's Jeff Pickler staying internally. I don't think it's going to be Jake Maurer. I don't think they'll stay inside. I feel like Sandy Jr. has the catcher. He's got the Hispanic thing. He's got the Falvey connection with Cleveland.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
There's just too much that makes sense there for me.
My gut says a two-year contract, which is really a one-year kind of. It was kind of like what Gardner
always
got.
So you get... Let's have a Chipotle bet on this, a handshake bet.
Yes.
If Molitor is managing this team next year, I owe you Chipotle. If anyone else is managing, I get Chipotle. If Sandy Alomar is managing, I get guac in addition.
Guac.
Or queso.
Double guac.
Guac or queso based on how I'm feeling that day.
Sounds good.
Okay, this is a verbal handshake.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't have any witnesses. I don't know where the people that were watching went. But I don't know. I do not feel confident Molitor will be back.
Yeah.
And for as much as he said to columnists about I would like to be back, he's not going to say the opposite.
Yeah,
he's not
going
to say, no, I don't want to be back. Heck no. This place sucks. You know, he's never going to say that.
Yeah.
He might have confidants, but they can't report that.
Yeah.
You know, Doogie, for all the scoops he gets, was not going to get that scoop even though they worked together in some radio stuff. Like, he might get the scoop that Molitor's out, but he's not going to get the scoop that Molitor's out in August. So,
yeah.
I wait with bated breath and an open, empty belly to find out who's going to be paying for whose Chipotle.
Craving for guacamole,
Yeah,
so that's my take.
That's what I got. I hope people enjoyed it. hang with us for the offseason. We're going to have some fun guests. We may find a way to incorporate Mike Berardino more consistently, hopefully. You have to talk into the mic or people can't hear you there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is that how that works?
Just introduction to podcast now that we've been doing this for an hour.
An audience. I'm talking to the audience.
So, people, thanks for hanging out. If I ever get heated on Twitter, it's never personal. I want people to know that. Although, if you've hung for this entire show and you're hearing this now, you probably know that. But I want to hear people's opinions, but I want to give my own. I never want to make it sound like I'm slamming people. So thank you for everyone who reached out today with their sacrifice bunts and squeeze bunts opinions and keep Molitor, get rid of Molitor, trade for Verlander, trade for Archer, sign you Darvish. You're all appreciated. You've all made me part of what I've been able to accomplish in this business. So thank you. Thank you, everyone, for not only following on Twitter, reading articles, and listening to the podcast, but just for all the support. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.